Kelly Leonard is in our studio, the guy that does that Getting to Yes And podcast, the Second City guy. Welcome back. You are the, by the way, executive director of Insights and Applied Improvisation at Second City here in Chicago. Kelly, how have you been?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Well, now I'm all wound up.
You are wound up.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Not at all.
Our guest has been Kelly Leonard. Thanks for coming by.
We're done.
So, a couple of things to talk about with you.
Yeah.
You said you wanted to talk about your email situation last.
Yeah. We'll talk about email last.
But let's just remind people, if you are here at, say, 10:48 in about 10 minutes, towards the second half of this conversation, you're going to say something about email that will free us and change our lives.
It will change your life.
How many email do you have on your phone?
Right now in my inbox?
Yeah.
I have six.
I have 16,578. We both checked our phones a moment ago. So what's this midlife crisis you're going through?
Well, I'm not going through it now. I went through it a while ago. So in 2015, after I wrote the book Yes And I went on book tour, I came back and I quit my job at Second City. Did you know this?
I knew you quit your job. No, I didn't know
that. You didn't know that.
I knew that Second City got new owners and you had a new boss.
Yeah. That's now. And I'm So I did quit
my job. You quit your job.
I did. I was the producer of Second City. And
how
I quit
long
my
ago
job.
Was this?
5, 6, 7 years ago.
Keep going.
So my boss at the time, Andrew Alexander, God bless him, knew I was unhirable anywhere else. So he said, why don't you take a year and we'll pay you as a consultant and you can build a bridge in or build a bridge out, which was a very kind thing to do.
I've
been there a long time. So, and then shortly, so I moved into my new office, which actually was right next to his. It was the best office I'd ever had at Second City. I go on vacation. It was the summer. Do you remember when Second City caught on fire?
No, I don't.
Yeah. So Second City caught on fire, that summer, and my new office was completely destroyed.
Oh, my.
So the fire ripped up through, the restaurant below us. It was a grease fire in the kitchen, went through my office, my owner's office, and then on the roof and cut through. So all my stuff was destroyed. And we moved offices, and I think you'll remember we ended up at the Trib Tower.
Sure.
And I was now working in this area where all the corporate people were, the people who do all the selling for the corporate. And so we're sort of crammed in these temporary offices. And my boss then said, Steve Johnson said to me, hey, you used to invent all this stuff over for the stages. You did collaborations with like Lyric Opera and Hubbard Street Dance. Can you think of what you might do with the corporate group? And I remembered that when I'm on – okay, so any author who tells you they don't do this is lying. When you have a book and you go on book tour, you always go to the local bookstore to see if your book is there. You always do. And so I would go to the business section because I wrote a business book. And I saw that there's all these books on the art of negotiation. And they all mention how important improv is to negotiation, but they don't go farther. So I said to Steve, I go, hey, what if we found an academic in negotiation and we collaborated with them to offer a new class? And people might be excited about that because it's academically, you know, certified and then it's got Second City. He says, great, go do it. So I Google academic negotiation Chicago. The first 5 professors who come up, I email them. 4 of them get back to me and they're like, yeah, we're totally interested. And then the 5th one, I didn't hear from. So I'm about to make this deal with this woman from Loyola. And I get a email from the 5th academic, Eugene Caruso from the University of Chicago. And he says, sorry, I didn't get back to you. Do you still want to meet? So like normal, like old Kelly wouldn't have taken the meeting because I have my bird in the hand. But I'm in the Shonda Rhimes now year of, you know, and I take the meeting. And he invites his wife, Heather, which is a good thing because Eugene didn't care. But Heather is locked in, and I'm talking about improvisation. She goes, Kelly, we're behavioral scientists. We have decades of research that show us that people make bad choices for themselves. You have a practice, an art form, that allows people to practice making better choices. Those two things have never been put together. I bring my wife into this conversation, and within a month, Richard Thaler, who ran the Center for Decision Research at the Booth School of Business, Nobel Prize winning economist, greenlights the Second Science Project, which looks at behavioral science through the lens of improvisation. So it's this program that we started.
At the University of Chicago?
At the University of Chicago.
Is there a class that people
No, so we had a lab that we did for about 3 years where we would do research. We'd work with scholars and do experiments and research. We build executive education programs. We also built 3 orientation workshops that the university still does today. And the interesting thing was, when we first met with the scholars, they said, can you teach us like the stickiest exercise that you do in improv, which of course is yes and. Have I ever told you how we do the yes and exercise? I don't think.
I know the concept, maybe I don't know the.
So the actual exercise is we pair up two people and we say, person A and person B, you're going to plan a reunion. Like, we've had an amazing day today. You and I, we're going to plan the reunion. So person A, you pitch your idea for the reunion. Person B, you're going to do this for about a minute. Person B, you say no to every suggestion in as many ways as possible. Go. And we have them do that. And then we ask, what did that feel like? And someone says, like, a normal business
conversation. Somebody says, we're going to have it catered.
No, we don't want catering.
We'll get a big tent.
Nah, I don't want a tent.
We'll have a volleyball net.
There's no net.
Yeah, like that.
Like that. Then they reverse. And person B is going to pitch. And person B starts pitching their ideas for the reunion. And person A says, yes, but, to every initiation. So when we talk to people how that felt, 50% will be like, that was better. And 50% will be like, that's worse. Because yes, but is like no with a top hat. It is passive aggressive.
Yeah, it does feel like I'm not really saying
that. I'm not
yes.
really saying that, yeah. And then we have them reverse and we say, okay, now you're going to pitch your idea and you're going to yes and every idea. You're going to build on what the person gave you into something new.
So the most important word there isn't yes, it's but and. Versus and.
It's but versus and. The and is the important thing. And so the scholars were like, this makes perfect sense based on the evidence we have, especially in behavioral economics. Because in behavioral economics, it says our default position as people is to do nothing or say no.
I think people are having a lot of difficult conversations these days
yeah.
about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Let's pick it up here in a minute. Tell me how that'll help us. And also how you're going to free us from email tyranny. Kelly Leonard's in our studio. You hear his Getting to Yes And podcast. He's the executive director of Insights in Applied Improvisation over at Second City. Kelly Leonard is in our studio. I don't know why I just said Leonard, but I certainly did. He's the executive director of Insights in Applied Improvisation at Second City. You may listen to his Getting to Yes And podcast. But he was just talking to us about sort of how that came to be and the yeah. study they did at the University of Chicago. So pick it up there.
Yeah. So we got the academic seal of approval on yes and, which was nice to have. But then they challenged us, the scholars. And they said, what happens when you don't want to yes and someone? So your earlier person who was on about the masks, you know, like, I don't share that quality. But what if you have to stay in the conversation, right? You know, what do you do? And we didn't know and they didn't know. So they went and looked at the academic literature and we went and started improvising around different kinds of phrases. And as we came together over the course of a couple months, we kind of figured it out. We think we figured it out. And the idea here is if you and I need to stay in a conversation, we don't agree. So yes and doesn't work there. What works is thank you because. And the idea here is I thank you for the information you shared, even if I don't agree with it, which sets off the gratitude part of your brain. You've just been thanked. So you're not going to be on the defensive.
That feels better.
Feels better. And the because is crucial. I find something in what you said that I agree with. Anything. So in the case of like the mask thing, I'd say what I would say to this woman is go, thank you, because we both care for our kids so much, we want to do the right thing.
And not thank you because now I know you're a knucklehead.
No.
I mean, because there's value in that revelation. Now I know what I've got here, but that's not what I should say.
No, because the thing is, she cares for her kids' well-being.
She certainly does.
And that's we agree.
I know that.
We agree.
That is a harder note to play.
I way mean, like, harder.
Because as she's saying these things, I'm thinking, lady, you're nuts. The doctor said wear a mask. You don't think you should wear a mask? I'm finding it difficult to thank her for something, but I can do it if I pay attention to what you just said.
Yeah.
So thank you because I know you and I both care about the kids.
You find the point of agreement. And I'm not saying you do this like with everyone all the time. There are real agreements that you need to fight people on. But this is for those moments when you actually do want to stay in connection.
Conversation. Yeah. But is that an exit? That's essentially opening a door for you out of the conversation too, isn't it? Or
it
no?
It can. I mean, the way we're using it, and we've done the study, all right? We've done the study, and people are proving that they stay in the conversations longer and they actually find more points of agreement. The paper that we're working on for this thing was going to come out this year, and it's now not. It's going to come out next year because we decided to also test when only one person does thank you because. And it's still effective.
You mean two people having a conversation mm-hmm. and the other person doesn't return the favor?
Nope.
But at least if one of us breaks that ice,
it's more effective, more productive. And this is thousands of people.
So what's a business application for that?
Oh, this is a everyday application. If you think about the world we live in right now, where no one wants to have a nuanced conversation or talk about anything.
I think Joe Biden's a good president. You think Joe Biden is a socialist. So you say thank you because I know we both care about the future of this country.
Care about the future of this country. And that gives us an opening for some level of, you know, common sense, humanistic relationship.
It's not a panacea, though. I mean, we still disagree on Joe Biden.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, that's okay. Disagreements are fine. I think I want to live in a country where we do have these disagreements and we're able to like still talk to each other and with our neighbors.
I hope the mayor and the city council are listening to this on our podcast, The Mincing Rascals, when we were talking about Lori Lightfoot's blow up with the city councilwoman the other day, where she called her to the side and they were arguing about a couple of things. And Austin Berg, my friend from the Illinois Policy Institute, said, that's not a crisis that the mayor calls out a councilwoman and they're having a heated conversation. Democracy is messy, and it should be.
Yeah.
That's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, yeah. No. I mean, it's healthy. This is how you get to good decisions, when people disagree and find better ways to do things.
What do you have to say about productivity?
Okay, so I just interviewed these productivity experts for the podcast. It's Robert Posen and Alexandra Samuel, and I was blown away by the chapter on email. And basically, and I've had other guests who said this to us, was we weren't trained in how to do email communication. We weren't trained how to communicate in digital, period. And we do that 90% of the time now in work environments. So one of the things that she learned this from one of her mentors, was that email is dragging us down. And she asked me how many emails I had in my inbox at that moment. And I had 100, which was actually good for me. Like, when I'm out of control, it's around 300 or so. And she's like, okay, so you have an iceberg on your email. You have all these emails down below that are just sitting there that you're not doing anything with, that are basically screwing you up. It's cognitive overload. They have this method called the Ohio method, which is only handle it once. So you get the email, you respond, and you delete it. I deleted every single newsletter. Like, I love Malnati's Pizza. I love them. I don't need to get their newsletter.
I do.
Right?
I get the newsletter, right. But I don't value it. I don't know why.
Spotify. I go on Spotify every single day of my life, and I get their newsletter. Why? I don't need it. Also, if you're CC'd on an email, you can set up a box so your CCs go to that box. Because if you're CC'd, it's probably not important for you, and you could check that twice a day. And then you're not clogging up your inbox. And like I just said, I have 6 emails in my inbox. I can't even tell you how freeing that is.
How long did it take you to get to that place? That is, how many hours did you have to spend on your phone deleting things or unsubscribing to things?
Yeah, it took me 2.5 days. And I've had at least 3 people in my office do it as well. And one of them had like 30,000 emails.
Yeah, kind of like me.
Yeah.
Because here's the mistake I make when I sign up for Spotify or when I buy a pizza and they say, hey, do you want to get our newsletter with discounts? I go, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. What's the harm in that? No obligation. If you want to tell me about a sale coming up, I'm in. I have a lot of that.
No,
I'll bet the 16,000, I'll bet half of them are stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you want to be really scared?
Yeah.
Really scared, Kelly?
Well,
201,962.
Is what?
Is my inbox.
201,962.
We
have a winner.
Now that's criminal.
That's criminal.
No, wait.
No.
Thank you, Elif, because now I know why.
Now you feel better.
Because now I don't feel so bad. No, that would be the snark.
That would be the snarky version of thank you because.
I want to do this. Thank you, Elif, because I now know why you and I sometimes get clogged up on our email. Why we don't operate so efficiently. Yeah. I've got 16,000 and you have even more than that.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
How did I do?
That was very good.
Yeah, yeah. Wowzers, Elif.
I know, and I just emptied 100,000 the other day. I know. Yeah.
Let's go back to Kelly Leonard, already in progress.
My wife fights with me about this because she says she uses her inbox like a chest of drawers or, you know, like, you know, and
yeah.
You know, and I get it. I know what it did for me, and I know what it's done for my colleagues in terms of, because now I see exactly what's coming in, I deal with it, and I don't have this whole iceberg underneath that's just waiting for me.
Kelly, what do you say to the people that have email FOMO? I worry that I'm going to miss a good deal or a subscription or just information that I had previously said I might be interested in. So when I look at my phone, I'll scroll through and not open a lot of the email because it's not relevant, but I feel like I need to have these touch points.
Yeah. I think the downside is worse than the upside there. And FOMO is a problem, right? I mean, this is the problem with social media, which is, in general, is that we think everyone's living these lives that are better than ours. And it's like, it's a very improv thing. You want to play the scene you're in, not the scene you want to be in.
Is the correct application of Ohio then, don't go to your phone for your email all the time? That is, only look at your email when you have time to open it, handle it. What is the acronym?
Only handle it once.
Only handle it once, right? But if I don't have time to respond, and that's part of Ohio,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So don't go to your email unless you have time to do your email.
Yeah, I mean, most productivity experts, and they talk about this in the book, say that you want to make your day toggle between the sort of deep thinking when you're not on your email, you're doing your writing or your whatever creative tasks you have to do, and then those rote tasks, like going through your email, do that for 15 minutes and then move to your other thing. You know, multitasking isn't a real thing. Multitasking means you're doing everything a little bit worse. And yet we're required to multitask. It doesn't make sense. And this comes up in the podcast over and over and over again, which is we have all this science to show us the better way we should be doing things, and our business lives and often our lives aren't set up that way.
I was here later yesterday than I wanted to be. That happens too often, and mm-hmm. I know I'm guilty of this. I'm thinking I'm doing a couple of things at the same time. Sometimes I'm doing a lot of things. I found myself yesterday jogging down the halls to get from task to task as quickly as I could. I don't know why I'm sharing that detail with you, except to say that I appreciate what you're giving us here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If nothing else, starting with the email, because this is an iceberg.
Yeah, it's an iceberg.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the next on your podcast then?
Oh, we got some good ones coming up. We were talking about democracy in our nation. I interviewed a professor who wrote a book called Improv for Democracy. He thinks that improv is a way that people can have these difficult conversations.
When you look for podcasts, look for Getting to Yes And with Kelly Leonard. He is also the executive director of Insights in Implied Improvisation at Second City. Nice to see you, Kelly.
Thanks, John.